Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. There are over 100 archives there for you to listen to, different people I've interviewed through the years, filmmakers, screenwriters, DPs, you name it, that I've interviewed, all people in the film industry. Last week, I interviewed Jeremy Breslauer, who did the film 1982, and he's working on a new film. His DP was actually awarded by the Directors Guild, and he's really surrounded himself with some amazing people, and that really shows you the importance of teaming up with important people, people that have done some great things in the industry, and you could always learn from them as well. So I had a great conversation with him last time. Before that, I interviewed Perry King, the prolific actor who's done work since the 1960s. He's been doing work. But today, I'm interviewing Gil Green, who's directing a film about ALS called Who is Lou Gehrig? And I think I have him on the line. Okay, Gil, are you there? Hi, Gil.
Hey,
how you doing?
Hey, Rachel, I'm here. I'm good. How's it
going? All right. Good. Good.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Tell us a little bit about the film and the way that you're telling this amazing story and how you got this idea.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is one of those jobs that or projects that wasn't something that was like super planned or like a passion project that I was thinking about for the last couple of years. It came out of circumstance. A good friend of mine that when I was probably a teenager, I met playing basketball and working together, named Jeff Fogel. A couple of years ago, he was diagnosed with ALS, you know it as Lou Gehrig's disease. And he's one of these guys that just didn't crawl up into a ball and hide from the world. Like, he just, you know, he has this amazing spirit, and he started to make a lot of local noise here in Miami. A couple of the news stations were showcasing his story because he's a coach at the Michael Ann Russell JCC, and he coaches football teams and young girls basketball travel teams, and he really was just becoming an inspiration for a lot of people in the community. And there's a local ALS group called the ALS Recovery Group, or the ALS Recovery Fund. They're a small organization that tries to help people with Lou Gehrig's, and they picked up on Jeff, and they wanted to make him kind of like their poster child. And they had the idea of making some PSAs. And Jeff, just knowing what I do, you know, I've had a pretty good career as a music video director and commercial director. He told them about me and said, hey, you should talk to Gil. He does filmmaking. And they reached out, and they're like, you know, would you like to make some PSAs for us? You know, with Jeff, I said, look, I'll do anything with Jeff, but, you know, let's take this opportunity and do a creative project that hasn't been done before, something a little bit out of the box, something that will resonate a little bit more with people. You know, when you think of PSAs, you think of kind of like the sappy, you know, Sarah McLachlan pets, you know, that don't have a home. And it's just really all meant to play on your emotion of feeling sorry for someone or something. And by all means, this is like a sad disease, and it has its challenges. But I wanted to do a story that showcased, you know, somebody who's has these challenges and is also inspiring us. And so we showcase, you know, best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds. And I wrote this 12-minute film, and I pitched it to them, and they loved the idea. And just to give you a little backstory, I have a little insight of dealing with this disease or a disease similar to it. My father recently passed a few years ago with a disease called MSA, which is multiple system atrophy, much more random than Lou Gehrig's, and even though a lot of people don't know about Lou Gehrig's, a lot of people don't know about MSA. But it's the same effect. Your body basically shuts down. And so I had firsthand knowledge of, like, caring for someone. I moved back to Miami, Florida to take care of my father and moved him in with me, and we lived together. And that's where I got the inspiration, because the same type of spirit that Jeff has, my father had. And my father was a ex-basketball player, professional athlete his whole life, and then watching his body, like, you know, basically get to the point where he could barely raise his hand to, like, lift up a piece of food to his mouth, you know, I started wondering what was in his mind and how he challenges himself to do these simple tasks that we take for granted. And that really became a big inspiration to apply what I believe my dad was going through with what I believe Jeff was going through. And when I wrote the script and presented it to Jeff, he was like, man, I do the same thing that you wrote about your father in the script. So it's kind of like, you know, the universe just kind of threw me into this project, and it's one of those projects that feels good. And, you know, we can talk about how we got the whole community involved in it, and it's moving forward now. But, you know, that's really the little backstory about it.
Wow. Wow. And you're telling this story not just like, it's not a documentary. It's kind of going to have some pieces of imagination. Tell us about that dichotomy of having more the realism and then the imagination.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I meant. This is more, it's definitely not a documentary. It basically takes us from the opening scene as, you know, Jeff going to the doctor and trying to figure out what's wrong with his body, why he might be losing his balance or having some issues with mobility, and being told by the doctor firsthand, like, what he has. And we follow a little bit of him trying to, you know, learn firsthand what he has. But then as the disease progresses, you know, he basically is losing mobility, and this is kind of like where the fantasy of it comes in, because Jeff challenges himself to do simple things that we would take for granted by imagining that they're huge feats. Like, for instance, there's a scene where, you know, he's still trying to drive, and everyone in his family is feeling sorry for him, and they want, you know, he needs to go to the local grocery market to get some milk, and everyone's offering, oh, I'll go. And he's like, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to make it. And he gets in his car, and as soon as he shuts that door down, his car turns into like a NASCAR, like, race at the racetrack. And it's like his imagination takes us into that world, and he's, you know, the stoplights become the green flags and the checker flags, and that's his world. And you know, and then obviously when he ends up at the grocery store and he opens that door, he clicked back into him struggling with just trying to step out of the car. But those are the things, that's how his imagination plays. And like another similar scene would be him coaching his 12-year-old girls. And, you know, it's only the first game of the season, but he's such an emphatic coach, and he's so passionate about coaching that, you know, when he calls a timeout to tell one of the teammates that she missed a pick, and he huddles the 12-year-old girls into a group, and he looks up, all of a sudden all the players are a professional basketball team like the Miami Heat, and he's coaching the Miami Heat like in a championship game. And and the idea is like the simplest things, you know, he uses his imagination to make them the most grand scenarios. And that's what, you know, inspires him to even at a Thanksgiving dinner get a piece of meat into his mouth, a piece of turkey into his mouth, is like it becomes a huge task. And these simple things that, you know, when you lose your mobility, when your mind is telling your body to move and it's not moving and you're trying to push, you know, it's like these are the things in his mind that he challenges himself with, and he goes into this world to make happen. And so the film is not a documentary. We show the challenges and the obstacles of having this terminal illness, but we also step into a fantasy world of your mind where, you know, I often did it as a kid. Whenever I was on a basketball court, and, you know, if you're an athlete, you always dream about playing in a championship game to just make a simple free throw or something like that. So kind of like it has a little slice of my imagination, what I imagined my father was going through and what I imagined Jeff is going through.
And you mentioned the Miami Heat. You have Udonis Haslam involved. So tell us a little bit about how you got him to be a part of this, and I'm imagining he's going to be in that scene you just mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. I've known Udonis. I've been good friends with him for quite a while now. I shoot the opening intros for the Miami Heat every year, so it's one of those really fun jobs I get to do, and you know, have great relationships with the players. And Udonis, I actually knew before that. He made some cameo appearances and some music videos I did. And when we began talking, we realized that our fathers actually played basketball together in from Dade County, before we were born. So we have this kind of crazy link together. And, you know, I work with a lot of famous athletes and music artists, and I never really approached them for anything like favors or anything. But I felt like this job, it means more than just like a project to, you know, an average project is usually meant to make money or something like that. This had a deeper meaning. So I felt like his heart, he would be open to it. So I approached him on like, hey, could you act in this film for me? Because it would make this scene just larger than life. And that was really how I started. I just wanted him to act in the scene. And when he learned about Jeff's story, he became so moved and inspired by it that he wanted more involvement in it. And, you know, he now is an executive producer. He's contributed to it financially. He's, you know, he's been on all our media pushes. He's donated a ton of rewards on our Kickstarter page to get people open. And when you talk to him and I tell him, I'm like, hey man, you know, you're going above and beyond. And he's like, man, you didn't ask me. I want to do this. Like, I really am inspired by his story. Like, when you look at Jeff, and you know that now Jeff is currently in a wheelchair, and this guy just pushes every day, not to complain, you know, just to live life to his fullest for the time that he has left. It's pretty inspiring. Mm-hmm. It really moved Udonis. And so he's been a huge part of this. So.
Wow. Now, do you plan to shoot this in Miami?
Yeah. I mean, the film, even though it's not a documentary, will have all the elements of a documentary. Jeff will be starring as himself, and we'll be using his real family to play family members and friends. And so we'll be shooting in all the locations, probably in his real house. While it is an international tale, it is also a very South Florida, Miami tale. And so we will be getting the support of the community involved.
Mm-hmm. Do you already have all of your cast? Is it just, like you said, his family, or do you need other people as well still?
Yeah, we'll cast some minor roles. Like another fun scene is, you know, one of the things that, you know, is another challenge is as you have this disease, like you, at a certain point, you can't even bathe yourself. And I remember my mother, you know, he'd have like, you know, an older lady come, a nurse, and bathe him. And you know, Jeff's mind, one of his fantasy scenes is all of a sudden that older, you know, 60-year-old lady becomes this 20-year-old hot girl that comes in. And in his mind, he's getting a nice bath from, you know, a fantasy of his. So there's fun moments like that in the film. But, like, certain roles like that we'll cast, like the nurses and stuff like that. It'll be some roles, and we'll get some actors involved.
Now, your company is 305 Films. Tell me a little bit about that. Do you have a lot of directors that are a team, or how does that work, your company?
Yeah, I mean, 305 Films now has been in existence for, I'd say, about 8 years. Again, it's a company that kind of happened organically. I was doing a lot of big music videos and living in Los Angeles at the time, even though I'm from Miami. My career took me from New York to L.A., and I was with a company called Partisan, which was a great company. It's, you know, Michel Gondry's company, and he's a big inspiration for a lot of my work. So I was honored to be there. But at the time, you know, music videos had big budgets, and there was one job in Miami that the production company just couldn't facilitate. The budget wasn't big enough, and it was a local artist named DJ Khaled, who now is pretty big on the national scene. And it had a bunch of artists like Akon and Lil Wayne. And this is before, like, you know, Lil Wayne blew up to where he is now. But I knew a lot of these careers, and I knew DJ Khaled when he first came to Miami and was a DJ on the pirate radio station. And I said, I have to be a part of this project. I cannot let this lack of budget, you know, prevent me from working on this. And I reached out to a guy that I know who did production services in Miami named Judd Allison. And I said, look, Judd, I have this really cool project, not a lot of money. what can we do? And I guess it was a slow summer, and Judd, who just loved the idea of doing a music video, he said, hey, man, I'll make it happen for you. And he opened up the gates of Miami. We ended up shooting cars driving backwards on 395. We were shooting
wow.
boat scenes and crane. He got techno cranes and aerials. And I mean, the production looked like it was probably 10 times what the budget was. And it was our first video together. And that video, you know, propelled a lot of Miami careers. And I found just doing that video that I was doing videos in Miami every other week afterwards. And Judd was like, you know, why don't we start a company called 305 Films and, you know, and become partners. And I said, why not? You know, it makes sense. The universe is pushing me there. So we started 305 Films and we run our own productions. And since then we're cultivating probably three or four other directing teams or directors. And you know, Miami is a really great film community. It's not too small, it's not too big, so everyone knows each other, and we just get a lot of love because we've brought a lot of business for the last 8 years down here. So this film, like when we need the favors, you know, the people are more than eager to help out and offer equipment, cameras, and all types of stuff. So, you know, myself, I always followed the universe, and the universe pushed me to do this film. The universe mm-hmm. pushed me to partner up with Judd Allison and start 305 Films, and we've been blessed to stay busy and work.
Hey, it seems like you've worked with a lot of people on music videos. Give us a little bit of an idea of some of the other people that you've worked with.
Oh, wow. You know, I've had a great music video career. I've worked with people from Lil Wayne to Drake to Nicki Minaj to John Legend,
mm-hmm.
Common.
Is there Snoop Dogg in there?
What's that?
Is there Snoop Dogg video in there?
Oh, yeah, Snoop Dogg, Lil Jon. I mean, Nelly, all the big rappers mainly. You know, I'm a big hip-hop head. I grew up as, you know, like just this kid that was indoctrinated into this world of hip-hop and dancehall, reggae music. And that music is my background as far as, like, coming up in, you know, in Miami. So, you know, it's been awesome to follow your passion and make a career out of it and get to work with people that you admire just musically and then actually be part of the creative process on how their next visuals and images are going to come out. I mean, it's really a dream job for me.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was your favorite shoot?
You know, the shoots that really stick to me are those shoots that mean a little bit more, that the process is something special. You know, I love what mm-hmm. I do because I can work with people that also love what they do. And when you're in the trenches with your film team, and it's that moment of like, how do you guys collectively get through these problems, or how do you solve this problem? That's what I remember from my film shoots the most. Not necessarily the end product. It's like, hey, do you remember the time when we were all stuck in Africa and trying to figure out how we can get a film camera into the country? And, you know, so those are the like, the amazing, like, moments of being a filmmaker that you love, because it's about the people and it's about the connections and it's about those memories. And, yes, you know, what you put on film lasts forever, but, you know, I bet you, like, with any filmmaker, it's the stories of how you got it there that, you know, that mm-hmm. at least for me, that I'm most proud about. And there was one particular job, and again, my career seems to always be like this because I always follow the passion. There was a reggae artist about 10, almost like 12 years ago named Sizzla out of Jamaica, and I was a mm-hmm. big Sizzla fan. He was one of my favorite artists, and at the time I was doing really large budget music videos, but I wanted to do a reggae video because you know, I have this big passion for dancehall music and reggae music. And talking to VP Records, and there was a young woman by the name of Michelle Lynn who said, hey, I might be able to get this video for you, but you don't really have a budget, you know, it's tiny. And I was like, well, who would it be for? And she's like, well, it's Sizzla. And I just got so excited. And it was a song called Thank You Mama, which was like, paying tribute to everyone's mother, which I was like, wow, this is one of those songs you want to be involved with. So I was like, look, we'll figure it out. I was living in New York at the time, and I asked a bunch of my film crew in New York. I was like, look, I can't pay you guys nothing but peanuts, but would you want to go down to Jamaica and do a video with me? And they were all so excited to be, involved in the type of project like that. They're like, oh, Jamaica, let's go. And I don't know if they were thinking that they were going to be staying in the resort, but when we all got down there, we ended up sleeping in one studio apartment, like six of us, kind of trooping it out, because there was no budget. But that video was so special because I remember Sizzla, who's a Rastafarian, his whole camp, he had about 12 or 15 Rastas in his camp. They became our film crew. They became like guys that were, carrying our dolly tracks through the hills and putting it on rivers. And we just all bonded, like my film crew from New York and his Rasta camp. And then they threw us a huge party where his mom cooked for us in his judgment yard. And it was a real spiritual type of job. And,
wow.
It was one of those jobs. It's just like, it's those memories of how are we going to get this dolly track across this, ledge on a river to get this amazing shot of Sizzla, on the riverbank, and then having his like musical Rastas like come and set it up for us and help us build stuff. It was amazing. It was one of those amazing experiences.
Wow. So have you traveled quite a bit with your filmmaking, or have you stayed primarily wherever you've lived, the different places you've lived?
No, that one of the best parts of the work I do is the travel. I've been able to see the world, shot in everywhere from Jamaica to, Ghana to China, London, Paris, Colombia. Like we've really been able to travel the world and see other cultures, and that's the best part is getting to explore. And within each one of those different places, you speak the same language of the filmmakers that are there, and you have a new team that's there, and you bring some of your guys, and then you build with the locals, and that's the best experience because we all speak that same language.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that it's more difficult in the United States versus other countries to film as far as permitting and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's challenges. Every country has its own challenges. I mean, New York, shooting in New York these days for like music videos has its own challenges because when I went to school at NYU and we used to get this piece of paper that allowed us to shoot anywhere in the city, just being a film student, and they were so accommodable. And now trying to shoot in New York and Manhattan is a different place. It's all residential and you can't do playback and there's all these rules. So it's like, sometimes even just shooting in your own backyard now is more problematic than, going down to like Cuba where you can just put anything you want anywhere or something like that. So, every country, every city has its own obstacles. I remember at the time we were doing an Akon shoot in Ghana and we just wanted to shoot it on film because back then the digital cameras weren't what they were today. And there's no film camera or celluloid, as they would say, in West Africa. So we were just trying to figure out how we can get a 16-millimeter camera into the country, within 2 days. And that was the biggest obstacle there. So, everyone has its own obstacle, every city.
Mm-hmm. Of course, those types of obstacles are nothing compared to what your friend Jeff goes through every day. Back to his film, what do you think? What would you like people to come away with after watching the film about Jeff?
I want people to be inspired. It's not about ALS. I mean, though it is about ALS, it's not. All of us, whether our problems are as serious as Lou Gehrig's disease or not, whatever problems we're all facing with, they're serious to us. And And that's what I wanted people to come up with is, can you shift your attitude from the glass being half empty to the glass being half full? It's a paradigm shift, it's a matter of appreciation. And I hope that it doesn't matter if you know someone with Lou Gehrig's or not, that you see what it is about Lou Gehrig's. Obviously, you'll get awareness of it, but that you take the message of inspiration to overcome any obstacles that you have in your life, whether it's a different disease, or maybe it's just depression, or maybe it's, I don't know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend that broke up with you and you just feel like you can't get through another day. You know, that's real to people. And you know, people need strength to move on and move forward and appreciate the time and things that they have in their life right now. And so a major theme in this film is time. And, you know, one thing that me and Jeff have talked about is, you know, yes, there's no timer in Jeff's life ticking down, and he knows that, you know, that it's going to come, you know, sooner than he would like. But he also knows that it's coming, so it gives him the opportunity to live every day to the fullest. And a lot of us probably take that for granted, you know. We're probably like, oh, I don't know, I'll live forever, or I'll start worrying about that when I'm 65 or 70 or something like that. And, you know, let the days go by and maybe go to waste, or maybe not live them to the fullest. So I'm hoping that people take the idea of the present, the appreciation of now. You're living, you're breathing. You know, another day you wake up is another beautiful day. And grasp that and hold on to it. And hopefully maybe they'll grab that out of this film.
And you've had a tremendous response. You had a Kickstarter campaign trying to raise $60,000, and you've raised more than $66,000. Are you going to need more funds, or is $66,000 enough to make the project?
Well, what our main goal was to start shooting, because we don't know how, what Jeff's health is like, and we want him to be the star of this film. So $60,000 was what we needed to get this thing in the can. And then we wanted to raise up to $75,000 for post-production fees.
Right.
For, you know, editing it, coloring it, film festival submissions. So we raised our initial goal of $60,000, which was unbelievable. You know, a great response from everybody. And then, you know, we went beyond it. So we still need to raise a little more for post. And I think we'll easily make it. Like, we might throw a little party and have people donate. Like, you know, I don't know what we'll do as a bit of a fundraiser to get over that last little hump. But I'm just so glad that we can now say we're going to step on the set and start rolling the cameras.
Yeah, that's great. And this is going to be shown at the Borscht Festival in December. Have you had something else shown there in the past, or did you just apply for it?
You know, I haven't had anything shown there. I've attended it, and I love what they do. They're young filmmakers from South Florida that gives an opportunity for all of them to showcase their work. And I guess, you know, I knew a couple of people that were involved with it, one of them being Jonathan Kane. And I was on his email list, and I saw that they were doing submissions for scripts and stuff. And at the time I wrote this film, which is over a year ago now, the ALS fund group, I presented it to them, they loved it, but they didn't have the money to finance it. You know, they were like, you know, we might have a little bit of money to shoot, you know, a small PSA, but we had no idea, you know, of doing a film budget on this caliber. And I kind of, a little bit, like, the project almost kind of, like, just started to die, because, like, we didn't have any solutions. And I just, on a whim, just forwarded Borscht Film Festival, and I got an amazing response from them. They're like, this is the type of film that is perfect for us. We love it. Can we come meet with you and talk about it? How do we make this? Because I was applying for funds, but they don't have the type of funds either that would fund it. But what they do have is the knowledge of raising money and putting together these type of films. And they came and brought a new energy. They're like, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do a Kickstarter campaign. We'll get the message out there. We'll get behind it. We'll offer our production people, our PR people, like, but this film has to be made. So it got a whole new life when they were involved. And they're going to be integral in producing this. And, you know, we would love to feature it, you know, December. You know, it's a crazy turnaround, but this is all about trying to do that screening for the Borscht Film Festival.
Yeah, just follow the universe, because it seems to be telling you the right thing. So it'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah, but maybe that's the other message. Follow the universe.
So do you have, in the meantime, other commercial and music video projects you're dealing with too, or is this the only thing you're focusing on?
No, it's actually, it's crazy. Right now we're super busy with projects. We're wrapping up some stuff for another kind of Follow the Universe project, Sandals Foundation, which does a lot of work in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
We just did like a 10-day shoot in Jamaica for them, just showcasing like all the stuff that their foundation does. This week, I'm actually currently right now just in a car because we're on a location scout. We're filming the Miami Heat intro, which is going to be an amazing project. We're actually doing a bit of a short film this year. And then the following week, we have going to be doing something with the Miami City Ballet for their big gala. Doing like a really cool interactive stuff. And then all that's happening in the meantime, I'm still doing music videos for artists. You know, I got some stuff lined up with Flo Rida and just did another video for a reggae artist named Chronix with a young director from my team named Damien Fife. So, you know, we've been blessed with work, and even though the climate is changing for us as far as like budget and technology and everything, you know, we're passionate about what we do, and that's my motto in life has always been follow your passion, and, you know, the work or the money will follow that.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a website that people can find out more about you?
You know what? My website is up, and unfortunately it's getting revamped. It'll work on a computer. It's gilgreen.com, GILGREEN.com. Will not work on your iPad or iPhone. Yeah, and we have the 305films.tv, which shows some of our young directors. And then, obviously, to learn more about the film, whoislougehrig.com, and that keeps everyone updated with what we're doing and the Kickstarter campaign that just finished this week. And we'll be putting updates and all our donor lists up there as well.
So if people want to help out with contribution, are you going to have another Kickstarter, or do they just need to contact you?
Yeah, you know, we're still receiving some really good contributions to help us out with posts. And it's, if you're interested, you know, you could write a check to 305 Films and put that it's for the Who is Lou Gehrig post-production. And we're putting that money aside to, you know, to raise that last bit to get us to that goal. But, yeah, we still definitely need a little bit more funds, so any help would be awesome.
So they can contact you through the website, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Or you can always email me at info@gilgreen.com and, you know, try to get back to, you know, anyone who emails us from there as well.
All right. Sounds good, Gil. We're kind of running out of time already, believe it or not.
Wow. Thank you so much for showcasing our story.
You're welcome. I wish you the best of luck. Break a leg, right? It's a great project, and I know that you're going to get it done, and it's going to be great because I've seen some of your other work, and it's very impressive. So,
thank you so much. You know, we're looking forward to this one. This is, you know, all the work I've done has been great. It's for entertainment value and purposes, and some of the projects inspire you here or there, but this is one of those feel-good projects that we hope that is just going to move a lot of people and, like I said before, make you look at the world as half full.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, once it's done, we can bring you back and talk some more about how it went.
I would love that.
All right. Well, best of luck, and I will talk to you then. Thanks,
okay,
Gil.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you're welcome.
You're welcome. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, well, that was a great conversation with Gil Green. If you have not seen some of the work he's done, go to the websites he mentioned. It's amazing work. The amount of music videos that he's done will blow your mind, the people that he's worked with. And the quality of the videos as far as the DP work is amazing. The editing is amazing. Looking forward to seeing this film, Who is Lou Gehrig? I think it's going to be great. So I'm looking forward to seeing it when it's all done. But if you missed any part of that interview, you can always go back and rerun it again, and please share it with your friends. All right, guys. Let's see what other news I have for you real quick. If you want to be on the show, you can always email me. It's ravenprods@yahoo.com, ravenprods @yahoo.com, and I would be happy to take a look at your stuff. If I don't answer you for some reason, email me again, because I get bombarded sometimes, so it doesn't hurt to email me a second, third time. Also, I wanted to let you know my new magazine is out, the Independent Streak magazine for October. If you just go to www.independentstreak.com, then you can see the new issue. I definitely took like a Halloween angle with it. I have a great interview with Scream Queen Linnea Quigley, who really goes in depth about working on Return of the Living Dead and how she got her start in the industry, et cetera, et cetera. She's done over 100 films. She's still working. Amazing. She's done a ton of films. I also interviewed John Rousseau, the screenwriter for Night of the Living Dead, and that's a really interesting interview about how he not only was behind the scenes but also in front of the camera as a zombie and got set on fire and talk about low-budget filmmaking and some of the stuff that you do to make it happen. Real interesting interview. I have some tips from some people about lighting, screenwriting, et cetera. There's a lot of good little tidbits in there I hope that you'll enjoy in the magazine. If you'd like to be a part of the magazine, again, you can email me. If you have a hot story or hot tip that you want to give me, that's great. In addition, I'm always looking for advertisers, and you can let me know if you're interested in advertising. I have ads as low as $25, so if you want to be in the magazine, just let me know, and I can give you more info. Also, please like my Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/IndieStreak, just like this show, IndieStreak. On there, I put not only information about this show, but also upcoming events, castings, etc. If you have something coming up, again, let me know. Please like the page and let your friends know about it as well. I always mention that we have the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival also coming up soon. It starts November 7th, and I will be talking with people from that festival as well. A lot of great people coming to the festival, including George Hamilton, who's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. Jason Alexander, who you'll remember from Seinfeld, is coming for the opening night film, Lucky Stiff, which is in, and he will be getting a Career Achievement Award. We've got Daniel Baldwin coming, Clara Mamet, I should say. I don't know why I got French all of a sudden. Clara Mamet. No, it's Clara Mamet. And Ever Carradine is coming. A lot of people coming to the festival, as always. It should be a good time. Starts November 7th, so save the date for that. All right, guys. Well, I will be back next week with someone new, so please come back next week, and I thank you for listening today, and I will talk to you then. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.